buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Jace Brown, and Dawson Wise joining you on a Thursday. Guys, I am head over heels. I'm over the moon. Last night, got to meet Dalton Connect.
Saw that.
Was pretty awesome. I've seen him like five or six times this year. I've never had the courage to go up to him and say something to him, but last night, finally did. Got a picture. That'll be something, you know, that's pretty cool to look back on here in a couple of years. So I'm excited, and I'm excited to be on the airways with you guys. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop in and join our conversations. We'll help out with the Lady Vols head coach search to begin the show today. We're also going to call an audible, breaking down the Final Four matchups this upcoming weekend. A little bit of a schedule shakeup. We're going to adapt. We're coachable around here, so we'll talk about the Final Four.
There you go.
And as always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first topic is the search continues for the Lady Vols. Danny White faces a big decision, and probably his biggest decision, in fact, since he hired Josh Heupel in 2021. White is conducting a Lady Vols coaching search. Coaching search. I'm off to a bad start today.
Matt got you starstruck over there.
Yeah. That will reshape the program. Kelly Harper maintained UT as an NCAA tournament regular, but we're well past the days of Pat Summitt's dynasty. Harper repeatedly peaked in the Sweet 16, and the Lady Vols were eliminated in the second round this year to the NC State Wolfpack. And recruiting momentum has stalled as well. We've talked about a couple times how the high school classes have been either non-existent or less than superior. Harper's results weren't good enough for White. He acted boldly by firing a coach who played for Summit and won 20 games this season. Now, he must be bold in his quest to hire just the fourth coach in program history. That's pretty crazy to think about. The last two Lady Vols coaches came from the Summit tree. Will White look outside the Lady Vols family tree for this? That seems likely. We'll dive into that question here in a second. But today, we are going to act as the search committee and hammer down our top prospects for the next Lady Vols head basketball coach. Jordan Moore will join us here in a minute. After we give a couple of our top guys, Jordan will give his as well. But let's kind of narrow down the criteria of what we are looking for. What do you think the criteria should be for the next head coach? For me, I think it's a coach that, A, has plenty of experience at a particularly a Power 6 program, knows what it's like to come in to a school like Tennessee. And we know, first, I'll just go ahead and mention this, we know there are not a lot of coaches that are coaching at schools with the history and pedigree like Tennessee has, but I'd like to have a coach that has been around the Power 6 level and has had success there. I want to see a coach that does well in the portal, but also hammers down high school recruiting, because that's where you can get players for 2 to 3 years at a time. That creates a culture and a core of a team, which I think we've lacked over the last couple of years under Harper. And finally, I want to see late season success. Coaches that have made it to the tournament and have had success in the tournament against their matchups. That's what I'm looking for. Dawson, we'll begin with you. What are you looking at?
A few things. Established success is what I had first written down. I want someone that can do it and do it at a high level. Ideally, the highest level. I've kind of stressed, you know, since we started into this coaching search this week, I've kind of stressed I want someone from the Power 5 level. I think that's got to be number one on your list. As we understand now, as the coaching search begins, it is a very wide-ranging coaching search that includes several established Power 5 coaches. Now, we weren't given any names, but that was what was written in the report, that was who Tennessee was targeting first. So that's what I would like. I want somebody that can do it and do it at the Division I level and has done it at the Division I level in the tournament, especially because I feel like that's one of the main things that Kelly Harper lacked. Yeah, she could win 20 games a year. She could do that for you, and she could get you to the tournament and get you to the second weekend. I mean, did it two years in a row, was, you know, a few tough shots in the fourth quarter away from doing it 3 years in a row. So she could get you there, but I want someone that can get you a step further than that, because that's where the program should be. The program, you know, in the state that it is in and the tradition that it has, the pedigree that it has, should be playing this weekend. Like, that's where we should be at as a program still. So I want someone that can get you there and knows how to win those types of games. Secondly, good recruiting record. Look, Kelly Harper's very good at the transfer portal. I mean, she proved that with Rekia Jackson. She proved that with Jewel Spear, with Jasmine Powell. She got players that came in and gave you instant success. The problem is you have to combine that with good homegrown classes. You can't rely fully on the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Those types of teams, they don't gel or they flame out. You have to have some homegrown talent. Kelly Harper did not have that, and she did not have any lined up beyond two recruits who, by the way, have both reopened their recruitment over the past week. So I want someone that can go to the high school level and build a team that you can then add transfers to, you know, add a couple guy or girls in this case. I'm thinking about the guys team still. A couple women to your team that can help that homegrown core. Look at what Rick Barnes did. Builds a core. Zakai Ziegler and Jonas Adu and Jemai Meshack, guys that came to Tennessee – and then supplants that with Dalton Connect and with the future transfer guys we're going to see. Supplant that young core with some transfers, and that's how you win games. And finally, the fire to win. Look, the best coaches in the game right now, and the women's side too, are well-liked by their players, but they also know how to turn up the heat when it matters most. They know how to have that winning killer mentality to go win these big games. Look at Dawn Staley. Look at Gina Oriema, Tara Vanderveer at Stanford, Lisa Bluter at Iowa, who's playing in a Final Four this weekend, as well as Staley, and UConn, and Gino as well for UConn. So those three are playing there because they have the mentality to go win those games. They're well-liked by players, well-liked by fans, but when it comes down to it and you need to win games and it gets to the tournament, they're fiery. They're intentional with we are here to win. We are not here to be liked. We are here to win. I want a coach that does that as well.
Yeah, the first thing, like both of y'all have said, a proven winner at every level, whether they've, worked their way up the ranks to like a Power 6 school or even if, maybe if they are going to plan on going down into the Group of Fives or just the mid-majors at that, proven success at a really high rate is something that I'm looking at. You know, like y'all said, you don't want to really take a chance at somebody. You want somebody that you know can get you to the place that this program needs to be at, like you said, Dawson. And the big one, like y'all said, recruiting's I think those are the one, two. A proven winner and good recruiting, especially out of high school. Because, I mean, there's only one or two programs maybe that might be pushing it that have the resources that Tennessee does. And to have these just blunders in recruiting where either you're getting these lackluster, only two in-state recruits or just none at all, like we've seen a couple times under Coach Harper, you can't have that with the pedigree of this program. So I think if you can go out and sell that brand like you know you can with all the resources, the money, the fans behind it, you should be all right finding a coach there.
All right, so I know we talked a little bit about this on Monday, but just for the sake of the segment here, is it time to go outside the Pat Summit tree? I think we all agree here. My biggest thing with it is in the coaching search in years past, I think you've kind of tried to find a coach from the Pat Summit tree that would fit the best. Now I think it's time to let's find who fits the best at Tennessee, not from the Pat Summit tree, just who's going to do the best job as a coach. I think it is time to do that, and I think we all agree here.
We did. I mean, it's back-to-back bad experiences now hiring in the Summit tree. You've got to go outside. I mean, you don't see other programs hiring within a certain coach's tree. You don't see coaches retire. Oh, well, let's go get a former player of theirs. That's not what you see out of most of these programs. So it's time to go outside. You got to go get someone that can win and that's outside that tree that can come in and just instantly make an impact.
Yeah, you've given it a try twice already, and it hasn't worked out for you. There's so many other coaches out there that have been able to take their teams deeper. And both of the head coaches that Tennessee has seen after Coach Summit have been ones that have had success at these other schools, but not at a level that Tennessee is used to. And I think that's the big thing. You're not seeing the same success from Summit as you would have if you still had her here.
All right, the committee has converged, and now it's time to give our two big swing candidates plus a fallback option. Everyone will go around the table, give both of those, and give reasoning for each. I'll begin with Neil Ivey from Notre Dame. And this is, I think, my best big swing candidate. She's established herself as one of the best coaches in the country, only four seasons in to her head coaching spree with Notre Dame. She's won two ACC titles, made three straight trips to the Sweet 16. Neil Ivey, in my opinion, is a youthful coach that you can have for a long time, like a Dawn Staley, one that understands the game and can have a lasting impact at Tennessee. It'll be hard to pry her away from Notre Dame, but Tennessee, as we've talked about, in terms of the historic numbers, the pedigree of the university, the way this university treats women's basketball, I think, is something you can't find anywhere else in the country. And you know, a couple days ago, you were talking about at NC State. You know, they don't do basketball, women's basketball, the same way Tennessee does. So I think that speaks volumes and is intriguing to some of these top tier coaches. My next one is Jeff Walsh from Louisville. He's established himself as a coaching star since 2013, and you know, when the Cardinals were able to upset Brittany Griner and Baylor during that era en route to a national runner-up finish. He's gone on multiple deep March Madness runs, was linked to the Tennessee job back in 2019. Didn't seem like Tennessee reciprocated the interest there. I think Walsh would remain interested in Tennessee if he were to be offered the job. I think this would be a big swing as well. Now, another one for my fallback candidates, and these coaches, you know, are still good coaches, but not the top options. And I don't think Tennessee should be in the range of having a fallback. I think with how good this job is, you should be able to go get a couple of those big swing guys. But my fallback, if I had to choose one, J.R. Payne from Colorado, a Tennessee native from Jackson, has been on the rise at Colorado. The Buffs knocked off LSU in the first game of the season this year. And they've had three consecutive 20-win seasons, and were also able to make two Sweet 16 appearances. Now, I know that's not the benchmark that Tennessee wants to get to, but if you can do that at Colorado, imagine what you could do at Tennessee. So, J.R. Payne, my fallback candidate, my big swings, Neil Ivey and Jeff Walsh.
My big swing, number one, I'm going to go away from what I said earlier in the week, is Lindsey Gottlieb at USC. A quickly budding star in women's college basketball. Actually had a stint as an assistant coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple years back, but has coached at Cal and at USC, took Cal to the Final Four, made the tournament seven of her 8 years there, including that Final Four year where she went 32-4. At USC now, has gone to the Elite Eight, lost to UConn, came up a little bit short, but has a budding superstar that she drew, the number one recruit in her class, Juju Watkins, is becoming a star in college basketball, and has the top-ranked recruiting class coming in next season to USC. Now, might be a little tough to draw her away from that unless, you know, you could draw the recruiting class to Tennessee along with her. Again, someone well-loved in USC in only 3 years so far, two Elite Eights, a Final Four at Cal. Very successful. She's easily, you know, the number one probably home run hire, a young coach who's on the rise and has really good recruiting record already. Big swing number two, Scott Rook at Oregon State. Coming off an Elite Eight bid for the Beavers, a few straight recruiting classes that have really worked out in a very competitive conference, led by stars Reagan Beers, co-stars Tamia Gardner, and Talia Van Olhoffen, who actually just entered the portal the other day after their run ended. They survived the tough Pac-12 conference, made the tournament as a three seed, and upset two-seeded Notre Dame, coached by Niall Ivey, on the way to falling to South Carolina in a game that they pushed the Gamecocks to the absolute limit in that game. The Beavers have come on strong over Rook's first, I believe he's been there 7 years now, four Sweet 16 appearances, two Elite Eights, and a Final Four in his time at Oregon State. So, again, someone who's been there on the big stage, can bring in the big-time recruiting classes, can build a team, and can have success. So Scott Rook is my second big swing. My fallback is Carl Smesko at Florida Gulf Coast. Arguably the most successful coach not currently in Power Six. Not even arguably, won well over 600 games in his time at Florida Gulf Coast. Only Gino Auriemma and Kim Mulkey have won more games in Division I than Carl Smesko has. He is the only coach in the history of Florida Gulf Coast women's basketball. And that says a lot, I think. He's been there for 22 years.
Yeah.
Since they have had a program, he has 20 straight seasons of 20 or more wins, 7 straight regular season conference titles, 8 straight conference tournament titles, 9 out of the last 10 tournament appearances, a massive resume. Now, granted, he has not done it at the Power 6 level, but if you're going to go a different route, plays a very fast-paced style of basketball, a very offensive style of basketball, which you have to do now. I mean, that's the way college basketball is going. Very up-tempo. I know, thanks to Jordan Moore, ironically enough, he put it as they play a style similar to what Alabama does with Nate Oates. And, I mean, you see where that's gotten them to the Final Four.
Yeah.
So if you could translate that to Tennessee, grab the recruiting base, have some success, I think Smesko is a good option as well. He's my fallback.
Yeah, my first big swing one, I'm going to look towards Maryland's Brenda Freeze.
Yes.
I think she's, you know, kind of hits all the marks there. She's been one that's been able to recruit. I mean, Angel Reese started off in Maryland as well, so she's been able to get some of these big-name recruits up in Maryland. She's also taken this team to a national title run back in 2006. As well as 3 Final Fours. So I think for checking all the boxes, I think she hits the mark there, being able to, you know, recruit, being able to win at the highest level. I think that's pretty big. The only thing is her recent success with Maryland hasn't been great. I know this season was sort of an off one. Went in as a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament, got bounced first round by MTSU, if I'm not mistaken. No, that's Louisville. I'm an idiot. But no, they got bounced a little bit early, but still they put together a postseason run. They beat Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament in the quarterfinals, I believe. So still some big-time wins, just not really getting over the hump. I think with the resources at Tennessee, she could make a big move. And I'm going to walk back what I said about the Summit Tree. I think a second big one just for – S's and G's. I'll throw Candace Parker in there. I mean, she's getting close to 38, if not is 38 right now. So, I mean, she's not going to be in the WNBA for too much longer. And I think if you're really wanting to take a chance somebody in the Summit Tree, she's going to be the one. Somebody that's very knowledgeable about the game, a very smart player, and a very good player at that as well. I think she could really draw some recruits, because who wouldn't want to play for Candace Parker in college basketball? And just her pedigree, just as, you know, an analyst right now, even with the NBA and stuff like that, I think she'd be a really fun hire just to test it out. And fallback still in the Summit Tree, Kara Lawson. We've hit on her a little bit. But her success at Duke doesn't go unnoticed. She's put together some good years there, has some really good recruits, including, like Dawson was saying the other day, the top recruit in this upcoming class. So I think if she gets some more resources that she can use at Tennessee, she can take it a long way. A
lot of good options there. Want to bring in Jordan Moore, who released an article today on Twitter giving his full rundown of the head coaching search for the Lady Vols. Go check it out, JordanMoore_21 on Twitter. Great stuff. Jordan, we appreciate you joining us. Give us a couple of your top candidates and also who would be a fallback option for you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, guys. As you said, I released an article today kind of giving some names that I think would be good choices for Danny Watt to interview, and also some names that have been kind of thrown around that I've heard that could potentially be getting interviews for the Tennessee job. You guys have named off a couple of them already. You know, I think my A-list candidates would be a Jeff Waltz from Louisville. He has the track record. Outside of this season, his teams had made the Elite Eight at least for 6 straight years. They struggled this year, but before that, 6 straight seasons of making at least the Elite Eight. He has a national championship runner-up appearance about a decade ago. That, you know, they've been pretty consistent in the ACC. His name was thrown about when Kelly Harper was hired as the potential replacement for Holly Warlick, until Fulmer did a roundabout and chose to hire Kelly Harper. So that could be a name to watch. And there's also been some scuttlebutt in the last hour that could be a hot name right now in the search is Jeff Waltz. Brenda Freeze, I kind of pinpoint her a little bit because she's still decently young at 53. She has a long 20-year list of success at Maryland. She won a national championship. It could be potentially time for her to maybe move on, find a new challenge. They did struggle this season at Maryland, but she had a rash of injuries that led to this team this season struggling more than what was expected of what she had coming back. Those are probably my two top names. You know, there's been some names thrown out there like a Don Staley, which I think is a pop dream, but you just never know with Danny Watt. Lindsey Gottlieb will be a really good hire. But does she really want to leave L.A. with Juju Watkins been on that roster, her having the number one recruiting class in the country coming in? Does she want to uproot and come across the country when she has things set up to be great in the next few years? So that would be my A-list guys, would be Watts and Brenda Freeze. As far as some fallback options, Smesko, I've been on Smesko for about 2 years. I think he's an outstanding coach. Power 6 teams have tried to poach him before. USC actually offered him the job before Lindsey Gottlieb was hired. He turned it down and stayed at Florida Gulf Coast. He just loves, from everything that I've read and I've heard, he loves being in Florida. He loves being on the beach. His family's entrenched there. As you guys have mentioned earlier in the show, he's our first and only head coach in Florida Gulf Coast history. He's extremely happy there, but he's also got kind of getting up there in age. He's in his early 50s. Could chasing a national championship at a program with the prestige of Tennessee finally be enticing enough for him to leave? He's the third winningest coach in women's college basketball over the last 20 years. It's probably a coach that's the greatest coach in women's basketball that you haven't heard of.
Yeah.
And then my last one that I would give, that I've been on this year, she probably doesn't have enough experience to get the job, but I have heard that she has potentially interviewed for the job already, which is Kim Stevens at Marshall.
Okay.
This is her first year in Division I basketball, first year at Marshall, but she broke practically every record at Marshall she broke this season. Most wins in a season, most conference wins in a season, first conference championship since 1997, first NCAA tournament appearance since 1997, most points per game average at 86, most 100-point games, most 90-point games, most three-point attempts in all of women's college basketball this season. She runs a high-tempo offensive brand of basketball, which is Danny White's M.O. You can add Carl Smesko to that list, too. So those would be kind of my four names. The A-list people would be Watts and Freeze, and then the fallback options to me would be a Smesko or a Kim Stevens at Marshall.
So it sounds like a couple of those mid-major options, they play very dynamic offenses, a lot of fast-paced three-point shooting. Would you compare that to like an Alabama, per se?
Yes, definitely. I would definitely compare Smesko to, you know, as I put in my article, it's basically, you know, the style Florida Gulf Coast and Smesko runs is the Alabama Nato's offense just on the women's side. I think it was about 2 months ago or about a month ago, I put their shot chart up, and they had only attempted like 6 mid-range threes through like 25 games. It is strictly rims and threes is all they do.
That's the modern style of basketball we're seeing more and more in college basketball or men's college basketball too. Mm-hmm. So look, a lot of great options here. And we'll go around the table here. Jordan, we'll begin with you though. Who do you think is the most realistic option if you had to choose that would be the option for Tennessee?
I would really think it's Jeff Waltz. And the reason why is I think he's hit his head against the ceiling at Louisville. He's from Kentucky, grew up in Kentucky, so taking the Tennessee job is not moving to some foreign place, not like moving to the West Coast. You know, his wife played at Vanderbilt, so they're familiar with the SEC, has success, as I said earlier. I think Jeff Waltz would be a grand slam home run hire. And there's also a possibility, I don't know if you guys saw or not, but that Haley Van Lith girl entered the transfer portal today.
Yes.
And she played at Louisville under Waltz. Possibility that if Waltz gets a Tennessee job, she could potentially meet back up with him at Tennessee, and that could add you some talent to that roster.
Yeah.
And he's a good recruiter also, very good recruiter. So if I had a choice to hire somebody and out not named Don Staley, it's Jeff Waltz.
It's probably Waltz of the big name hires. It's probably Jeff Waltz because he's been in discussion for this job before, and now you have another opportunity to go get him. An athletic director, unlike Phil Fulmer, at least in our experience here in Knoxville, that you know knows to make the right choice here. I think and Waltz would be a good choice. Like Jordan just said, you could bring some talent with him. Keep some of the talent that's already here. I think you keep some of those players if you hire a caliber coach like that. It also attracts talent from around the country. You know, transfers that are like, hey, you know, this guy's been to the Final Four. He's been in the national championship game. He's been on the big stage, and it's a prestigious program. I want to go play there, especially with the departure of Rekia Jackson and a couple others of the big hires. Yeah, it's Waltz. Of the smaller hires, it's probably Smesko. Now, I know it's going to be hard to convince him to come away from Florida Gulf Coast, but you give him more resources and give him an opportunity to, yes, you know, he's done a lot of great things at Florida Gulf Coast, and he's done them a great service – but he has a chance now to go chase the championship, and it's the perfect destination job to do that with the resources here. So of the fallback options, if you will, it's Smesko of the big options. It's Jeff Waltz.
Yeah, I think it's obviously Jeff Waltz. I mean, like y'all said, I mean, he's been in discussion for this job before. I mean, coming off of year now, I can be correct. Louisville lost to MTSU in the first round this year. Might want to get that sour taste out of his mouth. And like you said, Jordan, I think he has hit a ceiling over at Louisville because he can only do so much there. I mean, he's been able to recruit really well. He just hasn't been able to get over the hump. I think at Tennessee, I think it's anybody's dream job pretty much. And whenever you can improve, why not try to improve?
Yeah, yeah, I agree with Waltz as well. And he was one of the top guys in my list as well. And you add on his experience, you add on his success in the tournament, and you match that with a program like Tennessee that has some of the best facilities for women's basketball, some of the best passion for women's basketball you get in the country. I think it's a perfect match. And keep in mind, Waltz was kind of upset. He kind of damn near begged for an interview in 2019 with Tennessee. Now I think it'd be a good opportunity. Tennessee needs a good coach like that. I think he's hit his ceiling in Louisville. I think that's a perfect marriage. Waltz would be my guy. Jordan, we appreciate you joining us today. And once again, a reminder, go check out his article on Twitter, JordanMoore_21. Gives you a full breakdown of some of the best candidates, including Jeff Waltz as well. We appreciate you joining, Jordan.
Hey, thanks for having me on tonight, guys, and I'll see you tomorrow night, Wim.
All right, I'll see you. All right, let's see. Let's head back to the phones. We got Martin on the line. What's up, Martin?
Yes, I'd just like to put out two names for you that I like.
Okay.
Coach Yo at Ole Miss.
Yes.
And Oklahoma's coach,
yes,
Jenny Marcinarek, I think is how you pronounce it, or something like that.
Yeah, we talked about both of them earlier this week. Coach Yo's had done a great job at Ole Miss, I can't remember how to pronounce Oklahoma's coach's name, but she's done a really good job too. Fast paced offense, like we talk about with some of these mid major guys we're looking at. So both options are great there as well. Coach Yo and Oklahoma's coach.
Do you think we could get one of them pretty reasonable?
If they
don't want to pay out over $2 million,
I feel like you could get almost anyone in the country with a job like this, with the resources you have, the athletic department that you have, the fan base, the recruiting base, the prestige. I think you could get basically almost anyone not named, you know, Oriema, Staley, Mulkey, anyone not named, one of them that's at the highest level. I think you could absolutely get anyone you wanted.
I heard that your Louisville coach probably wouldn't come.
Well, you know, there have been mixed reports. You know, in 2019, when the job was open, Waltz was one of the guys floated around. He was upset that he was not interviewed in 2019. But I think this is an opportunity for him as he's kind of hit his ceiling at Louisville, had so much success there, but now kind of seems to be just treading water. I think you have an opportunity to go to Knoxville, which is not too far down the road, a really good opportunity. You can recruit on a high level. You can bring in some top-tier portal players, one that you've already coached before in Haley Van Lith, who's entered the portal out of LSU. I think it's a good match. I think it's a perfect match, really. I think you just have to get them on board and say, hey, this is the opportunity for you. This is the opportunity to kind of reset and have a new opportunity with a really, really historic program.
Do you think we'll pay $2 million to get a coach? You make $750,000 a year, and it goes up over the next 4 or 5 years, it goes up $50,000 a year every year.
Yeah, look, if the price is right, the best coaches in women's basketball, that's what they're making. And if you want to be one of the best programs like Tennessee is historically, you've got to put up the numbers money-wise to get to that feat. So I'd tend to say yes.
Yeah, but see, what hurt me is Kelly got us to two straight Sweet 16s and an yes, and got us to a Final 32, and she lost her job. But see, Kelly couldn't win the big games.
Yeah, you know.
She scheduled them.
Yeah.
And this year she went out of seven. She played seven teams in the top 25.
Yeah.
And she went 1-6 against them.
Yeah, you know, they played a tough schedule. You know, make it to the Sweet 16 I think is good for a lot of schools, but at a school like Tennessee where the bar is a little bit higher than just that, You know, you kind of saw, you didn't really see a light at the end of the tunnel with this team under Kelly Harper. It just was, you know, it's good, but it's not great like Tennessee's women basketball's program has been historically. Anything to add, Dawson?
Yeah, I mean, it's been
just
three.
Just watch for the coach at Oklahoma, I hope, okay?
We will.
Thank you
so much for calling in, Martin. We appreciate it. Dawson, something to
just
add?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've had 3 years now of rosters that are top 5-10 in the country in terms of talent. Mm-hmm. You've had between the last 3 years, you've had either, you know, arguably a lottery pick in the WNBA, well, what's going to be the number 2, number 3 pick in the WNBA draft, Rekia Jackson, or Jordan Horston, who is currently playing in the WNBA, leading your team, combined with, you know, 4 or 5-star players, transfer portal players that should have enough talent to win you a title that have fallen short. And that's, again, compound that with this program should be further than the Sweet 16, and it wasn't working.
All right, when we come back, we're being coachable, we're adapting, we're going to talk about the Final Four, dive into the matchups, dive into the storylines when we return here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
What's the difference between an ordinary EV and a Mercedes-Benz EV? The feeling. Electric is what gets you there. Mercedes-Benz is what moves you in ways no other automaker can. Feel the freedom of the superbly versatile 7-seater EQB. Revel in the inspired, customizable comfort of the EQE sedan. Sense the brilliant intelligence of the EQE SUV. Discover the boundless capability of the EQS SUV. And luxuriate in the flagship meet spaceship magnificence of the EQS sedan. Every Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle offers the very latest MBUX voice-activated AI software, as well as remote access to a whole host of functions via the Mercedes Me Connect app. The vehicle's electric, the feeling all Mercedes, the choice all yours. Test drive a Mercedes-Benz electric today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQ.
Are you tired of spending hours on laundry and ironing? Let Crown Cleaners handle your dry cleaning so you can handle your business. Our expert team can take care of your clothes, removing stains and wrinkles like they were never there. Whether it's your best suit or everyday attire, we handle it all at Crown Cleaners. Say goodbye to laundry stress and hello to extra free time. Crown Cleaners, Big Orange Country's Imperial Dry Cleaning Service since the 1960s. Online at crowncleaners.com.
The first annual Fan Run Open is Saturday, April 20th at Williams Creek Par 3 Course. Proceeds will benefit the Boys and Girls Club of East Tennessee, Care Cuts, and Emerald Youth Sports. Sign up and compete with your team of 3-4 for the Fan Run Trophy or in our individual competitions, or hit it big by winning one of our door prizes. Hang out with the Fan Run crew and support our local community. To register your team or to become a sponsor, email us at fanrunradio@gmail.com or go to fanrunradio.com/shop.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Thursday. We appreciate you listening along with us. Great first segment talking about who the Lady Vols should look at in their coaching search. But now we're adapting, and it's time to talk about the Final Four. We were going to talk about the AFC East post the Stephon Diggs trade, but we'll move that to later in the second hour. But let's talk about this Final Four. The Final Four week is here. Alabama, UConn, Purdue, and NC State will convene in Glendale, Arizona. UConn made it to Glendale last night after a little bit of a problem. We'll talk a little bit about in the next hour. But they'll all convene in Glendale, Arizona to decide the national title. To help get you ready, we've gathered a couple of questions here to get you ready for this matchup and these matchups, I should say. We'll begin with this. Can anyone beat UConn? I'll give my answer first. I think it's Purdue. I thought even before the tournament began that Purdue could get it done because of the physicality, because of their three-point defense, and also having Zach Edey, a guy that could rival Donovan Clingan. So I think the matchup will be defensively for Purdue if they're able to force UConn off the perimeter, because Purdue and UConn both shoot really well from the three-point line, but Purdue boasts a better defense around the perimeter. I think the intriguing matchup in terms of player-by-player will obviously be Edey and Clingan. I think UConn has an opportunity to kind of expose Edey a little bit, especially by pulling him out of the paint, putting him in pick and roll. But I think overall, Purdue has the best shot out of any of the remaining teams. I don't think that's a hot take. But I think they could beat them. I really do. I have them beating them in my bracket, and I think it'd be possible. Can anyone beat Purdue? Or can anyone beat UConn?
Can they? Maybe. Will they, based on how they've been playing in the tournament? I don't think so. I think UConn is a buzzsaw. I think Purdue has been good. I don't think they've been as good as UConn all around. Everyone's going to want to watch Clingan and Edey and what's going to happen there if they match up. I'm watching everybody else. I'm watching players like Castle and Newton and the work that they've been doing compared to the guards of Purdue, which have been good again. But, I mean, Lawyer was good against Tennessee. Braden Smith was okay. And beyond that, what did they get?
Yeah.
And that was not Stephon Castle. That was not Tristan Newton levels of production. That's, yeah, I think, where the game is won for UConn. It's just that all of those players have been so good all tournament. And Purdue has kind of been off and on in terms of their guard play, in terms of their play outside of Zach Edey. We know what Zach Edey's going to do. Yeah. We know that matchup's going to be electric. It's going to be must-see if it's him and Donovan Clingan. You know, there will be questions there about how the game's officiated and all that, but I think you got to look further than that. You got to look at the guards, and UConn has just been playing so good as a unit. I don't think anybody can beat them myself.
Yeah, if there is going to be a team that does it, it will be Purdue, only because of Zach Edey's presence. I mean, we saw it against Tennessee. Tennessee didn't really attack Edey on offense whenever the Vols had the ball, just because they knew what they were going to run into down low with Zach Edey just patrolling the paint, not giving up easy shots whatsoever. I think it'll be a really marquee matchup, like y'all said, between Clingan and Edey, just to see if UConn does attack the interior, because whenever teams don't, that's when they really start struggling, even if you are shooting well from outside like Tennessee did against Purdue. But beyond that, I mean, it is really going to come down to guards. You know, I said it before March Madness, guards win in March, and they have been so far. I mean, perfect example is Mark Sears in Alabama. Mark Sears has been playing out of his mind, but if you can get those role guys around on UConn, I mean, they're really tough to beat. They've been playing solid defense. We saw them just tear up Illinois in that swing to start the second half. So, I mean, if they can get on a roll like that, not saying just to match it, but if they can pull away with like 10, 12 straight points against any team, I think nobody's going to catch them.
Okay, so now looking at the two Final Four matchups, who's more likely to pull off the upset, Alabama or NC State? To me, I think Alabama is the more potent team, but I think NC State has the better setup. When you look at the Purdue-NC State matchup, you know, Edey dominates because of his low post positioning, does a really good job of putting guys so far under the basket to where they're not able to really get a good contest. I don't think Burns will be on Edey defensively, because I don't think NC State wants Burns fouling out early on. So I think
they
might put Middlebrooks and Diarra on him. But, you know, if that doesn't work, then I think they'll have to move to Burns. And I think the advantage for Burns in this one is Edey really hasn't faced a big like Burns. There are not many of them around. And I wonder if Edey's able to move Burns around like he was able to do against Tennessee, just kind of just forcing himself over. Burns has got a little – he's got some strength to him. I wonder if he'll be able to knock him around. Now, the other thing is Burns has not faced a center like Edey who's so lengthy. So I wonder if he's able to get a consistent contest on him, especially if he's put so far down under the basket. That's my question there. I think NC State has the better setup because of the down-low matchup, but I think Alabama's more potent because they're very boom-bust. They're like a Kentucky. They just had a really good run in this tournament. They've been able to hit their threes. They've been able to play the pace they want to, and their defense has had an uptick as well. Against UConn, if Alabama's able to hit those three-point shots consistently, they could run away with it, you know, just because of the amount of volume they're taking on their threes. They could beat any team in the country. Now, if Alabama's not hitting those shots, it could get ugly. It's just very boom-bust. You don't know how it's going to go. So I think when you look at the two matchups, Alabama has the bigger boom potential to knock off UConn. So I'm going to go Alabama here, but I think NC State would have the better setup. In terms of the matchup. So I'm going to say Alabama because if they're playing their best, we've seen them beat UNC. We've seen them beat some of the best teams in the country this season. I'm going to go Alabama, but I think NC State has the better setup.
I'm going to say NC State, and it's because of a couple things. Number one, you know, and this is a question we've had with Alabama all year, and it's, you know, how long do these threes continue to drop?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
They are now due for a letdown performance, I think, offensively, and this is the best defense they're going to see. I mean, UConn, a very, very effective defensive unit. I mean, we saw against Illinois, and this is kind of where I'm at on this now, that 30-0 run, the 34-4 run with Klingon on the floor, just did so much against an Illinois offense that's potent as well, that I think that could pose some problems for Alabama. If UConn locks down defensively, if Alabama can't get shots to go, if they're having to take tough looks, I mean, heck, we've seen them have to take tough looks against Tennessee twice this year, on the road against Tennessee, at home against Tennessee. Tennessee's defense forced them to take bad shots. If UConn forces them to take bad shots and holds them off the board, I just don't trust that offense enough to keep pace, and I think UConn could run away. And then the second question I have with Alabama is how much defense can they play? Look, they played just enough defense to be able to get by so far in the tournament. Played good defense at the end of the Grand Canyon game, good defense at the end of the Charleston game, good defense at the end of the UNC game. Again, UConn, I think, is a better unit than all three of those teams. Can they continue that? You know, it's been a question all year, kind of like Kentucky. Great offense, not a lot of defense. They're due for a performance where the defense slips. They have a few cracks, and UConn is able to run away. That's why I'm kind of worried. I like NC State from a matchup standpoint with Purdue. Obviously, no one's going to match up well with Zach Edey. That's impossible these days. But I think they match up well, considering they have several options to go at him with. They have Diarra that can defend a big man. They have Middlebrooks that can defend a big man. And then, obviously, DJ Burns, like basically no other big man in the country, a very unique threat. So I like NC State better because of the run they've been on, because of the defense that they can play, the flexibility they have being able to play against Edey, and because Purdue's guards, I mean, we don't know what we're going to get out of them after Sunday.
I think I'm also going to roll with NC State here just because, you know, they do have that factor in DJ Burns. And like we were saying the other day, it really feels like this team has really started to click on the defensive end. They've been defending well. They've been defending guards well specifically. So I think with that mixed, you know, with maybe some lackluster compared to regular season performances from the Purdue guards, you might could say that. And like you said, they've got guys that can defend Zach Edey if they need to. They're going to have fouls to give with those guys as well. So I think that's something in the back pocket. And like you said, Dawson, it's just how far will the three take Alabama? I mean, we've seen how bad that defense is, specifically whenever – you know, Tennessee was on the road against Alabama, and they couldn't get anything rolling offensively. It felt like they were just drowning out there. Tennessee was, you know, making some moves on the offensive end, maybe not converting every time, but doing quite well enough to, you know, put Alabama in a panic mode. And whenever they got down, they just really could not claw themselves back out of the hole. Now, I will say Alabama does have a good shot if they can get some of their role players in, like Grant Nelson was going pretty well. Aaron Estrada has had a couple good games in the tournament. If they can get those guards rolling, and maybe limit, like you said, William, that perimeter shooting for UConn, I think they pose a really viable threat for the Huskies.
All right, so every year there's always a guy that takes over in the Final Four, the star. Last year was Jordan Hawkins. He was able to get so hot in a couple of pockets of those games, and you know, you look up and all of a sudden UConn was up 15, 20 points. So last year was Jordan Hawkins. This year, who will the star be of the Final Four? And I'm going to go with another UConn guy. Even though I think Purdue can beat UConn. I think overall, the way Zach Edey plays, I don't think is a star material. Mm. So I'm going to go with Cam Spencer of UConn. Another three-point shooter that can get very hot, transferred in from Rutgers this year, has been an immediate impact for UConn all year long, second in scoring for them. So Cam Spencer, to me, has the ability to have that pop ability to take over a game from the three-point line. Spencer would be my star.
I'll give you two. I'll give you one that I think it's going to be and one that I'm kind of hoping that it is based on how this goes. And, you know, going off script a little bit, I'm hoping it's DJ Burns.
Okay.
If you want to make a legend out of yourself, this is how you do it. Because, I mean, you're looking at, number one, I mean, they've won what now? Nine straight games? Is it nine straight games?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to beat Purdue and most likely UConn to win a national championship. And how cool of a story would it be to be 17-14 or whatever they were going in the ACC tournament and win basically 11 straight games and beat these last two teams? I think they're going to have to ride DJ Burns to do it. He's going to need to have 28, 29, 30 points in these games. I'm hoping it's him. I think he can do it. I think he's shown us he can do it. Realistically, I'm going to go with Tristan Newton. For UConn.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, everybody's going to look at Donovan Klingon. Everybody's going to go, oh, he's going to be the guy that takes over. That matchup with him and Edey, Newton has a chance to be the X-factor guy that wins them that game, that wins them the game against Alabama, and then wins them a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar to Cam Spencer, but it's Newton for me. I wanted to go a little bit off of Cam Spencer, so I think it's Tristan Newton at UConn.
Yeah, I'm also rolling with a Husky here. I'm going to roll with Alex Caravan. The last couple games for him haven't been the greatest, but, I mean, this is the Huskies' third leading scorer on the season, averaging about 14 points a game. So I think he's also due, you know, it kind of feels like one of those under-the-radar guys that, you know, have kind of just been coasting through the tournament so far, not maybe putting up the highlight reels together. But I think with some of the matchups he gets against Alabama, I think he can really shine on both ends of the court.
Yeah, all good options. Tristan Newton was a big impact for that championship team last year. Alex Caravan, another guy that returned from last year's roster. And then, you know, Cam Spencer comes in through the portal. He's been such a big impact. You know, I think it could be Edey if they're able to cut down the nets, but just – I think the biggest storyline to watch for is the whistle, especially in this Purdue-NC State matchup. And it's a tough one because you've got Zach Edey, who a lot of people want to tune in and see. He's also got the lovable teddy bear, DJ Burns, on the other side. Are you going to whistle him out of this game? You know, so and we've talked about it all week. If I'm Kevin Keats of NC State, every time I'm getting a microphone in front of me, I'm talking about how poorly officiated last week was. If I'm Dan Hurley in a potential matchup with Purdue, I'm talking about how poor the officiating has been, how inconsistent it has been. So I really hope that the whistle does not become a factor like it was on Sunday, because if you take the whistle out of it from Sunday, that was a great matchup between the two best players in college basketball this season. But the storyline, the takeaway from the game was, oh my gosh, do you believe how many free throws Zach Edey got? Can you believe how many times they whistled him for a foul? That if you're the NCAA, why do you want in the biggest moment of your season and the biggest, you know, moment you put on all year long to be credited by the officials? You know, why do you want that to be the big takeaway?
Right.
So I really, really hope that this weekend the officials aren't the storyline. Let the players play. Let the coaches coach. Let the refs do their own thing. Don't make the storyline the referees. There are too many great players we're getting to watch, and I think that'd be a shame if they were able to do that. All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbled Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbled crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time. Hey.
Lil CC on that beat. Yeah. I mean, where the f*** should I really even start? I got that I'm keeping in the dark. I got my across the street living large.
All right, back here on Overtime. Sorry for the delay. Had to give my quick rant on sports television these days. Sports talk radio, or sports talk TV on another network, not Fox. Anyway, time for our best bets of the night. Dawson, you've got a lot to go, so let's start with you.
How many should I do? Do all of them, one of them?
Just do them all, then we'll just go around. We'll give them all.
All right. Yeah, do them all. So I've got four. Obviously, having a call bit of an audible. I'm gonna do both Final Fours. I'll start with the women's. Those games are tomorrow night. I start with NC State at +11.5 against the number one Gamecocks. Look, this NC State team is on fire, like their men's team is. But there's this NC State women's team, we knew that they would be one of the toughest teams to beat coming out of this Portland 4 region. We figured going into the second round that whoever won this NC State-Tennessee matchup might end up in this spot, and NC State has done that. They rallied to beat number one seed Texas, number two seed Stanford, and, of course, beat the number six seeded Lady Vols. On their way to a Final Four, this team is stacked. Sonia Rivers, Isaiah James, River Baldwin have been excellent this year for NC State. They match up well with the number one Gamecocks. The matchup to watch will be Cardoso and Baldwin. And obviously, how do they defend the high percentage shooting guards of the Gamecocks in this one? But NC State is absolutely on fire. I like them at +11.5. Other game in the women's Final Four, Iowa at -2.5. Paige Becker's great performance against USC, but Caitlin Clark was excellent against LSU.
Yeah.
And where I see the difference in this is UConn's not very deep right now, riddled with injuries. Only about seven to eight available players for this game. Iowa, very deep on the bench and has several role players that really made the difference for them along with Clark. Kate Martin, Hannah Stolke, O'Grady off the bench, their backup center, was excellent as well. They have all of the tools and depth to make it work in that game. And at 2.5, I kind of like that line. So I like Iowa to go back to the national championship game. For the men's side, I like UConn at -11.5. Alabama's offense is potent, yes, but they are due to fall off a cliff. They are due to have a little bit of pulling back to where they're used to shooting, kind of coming off this run a little bit, and again against the UConn defense that was nothing short of stifling, lockdown against Illinois. I think they see that again here this weekend and just run out of steam in terms of shooting. UConn pulls away. I think they win this game by 15 points or so. The other game, controversial, NC State +9.5. Look, Zach Edey is going to do Zach Edey things in this game. I hope the whistle's not a factor. NC State has got the most heart of anyone left in the tournament, and when teams get hot, when teams play like this, they're bound to do great things. D.R. Middlebrooks, they'll have a tough task, but I think their guards will shoot well enough that they'll stay in this one, so I like NC State +9.5.
My first one tonight, I've got the Mavericks -12 at home against the Hawks. The Hawks still minus Trae Young. He's been out for about a month now, so I'm going to roll with the Mavericks once again tonight. Need a bounce back after that loss to the Warriors the other night. That one was, I think, both of us took the Mavericks in that one, and that one didn't work out too well for us. And, Hawks still very inferior. I mean, they're healthy besides Trae Young, but they're sitting in the 10th hole right now in the East and haven't really been clawing to make a move there. And the Mavericks are still trying to stay out of the play-in tournament, so they got a little bit more to fight for, taking the Mavericks minus 12 there, taking the 76ers plus 1.5 down in Miami tonight. Proved me wrong on Tuesday. Embiid did make an impact. I think he was under 30 minutes, but put together, I think, about 25 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, just, you know, typical numbers with just a shortened amount of time out there. So I think he was great. I mean, that was a Sixers win without Tyrese Maxey as well. So I think if they can go down to Miami and end that 3-game win streak, I would not be surprised tonight.
All right, my best bet of the night, Rockets plus 4 at home against the Warriors. Talk about a game with playoff implications. The Rockets are about two, three games behind the Warriors right now. They lost the two previous matchups this season. A little bit of extra juice coming into this one. And the Rockets are the best home court team in the league at 26-11-1 against the spread. And off a loss at home, the Rockets, they're 10-6 this season. So I'm rolling with the Rockets here. They need this one if they're still trying to get into that play-in game. So I'm taking the home team with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. That's my best bet tonight. Real quick, go around the table.
In the women's, NC State plus 11.5 and Iowa minus 2.5. In the men's Final Four, UConn minus 11.5 and NC State plus 9.5.
I've got Mavericks minus 12 and 76ers plus 1.5.
All right, those are best bets of the night and the weekend for Dawson's picks. And when we return, we'll talk about UConn having some trouble getting to the Final Four. We'll break it down in the next hour.